I remember actually one of the things that got me comfortable with voting for Trump was Elon actually hosting a space with Trump. And then I realized I've never actually listened to Trump.
For the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years, however long media, especially in the United States, has had a monopoly on the dissemination of information, we've been fudging brainwashed.
There's a massive social cost for actually thinking for yourself.
There's been a concerted campaign to quiet things that the thing, the blob, the system, deemed not proper to talk about, when in reality, those things are by far the most important things we should be talking about.
Yes.
The content of your character, you can actually change. That's empowering. You get to control that.
The thesis here should be, the more controversial the topic, the more popular it should be, because these are the things we have to talk about.
If he has bad ideas, then let's expose them and destroy them. Don't suppress them, because when you suppress it, it gets expressed just in a different way. If we create a culture where we celebrate winning rather than complaining about losing, then we can all win more.
It's really cool to see just how clear-minded and how neutral you are with your commentary, and you always target the root cause. You always try to get to the bottom of what the hell is going on, right? And I think that's just been very refreshing to see. And it's been good to see that sort of discourse elevated, especially on X, because that's really where I found your content. So maybe for the audience, give a little bit of a introduction, who you are, your background, what you do, and all that good stuff. But I'll give you the mic and just tell us who you are, why you're so good at what you do, damn it.
All right. Yeah. So why am I good at what I do? I'll give you a little bit of background on where I'm coming from, because I know I kind of just like appeared on the scene and Elon started promoting my stuff and people were like, who is this guy? I like what he's saying. I know nothing about him. So my name is Kaizen. By trade, I'm actually a life coach. So the whole politics and cultural commentary stuff is really only in the last 6 to 7 months or so. And for the last 3 years, I've just been helping people make positive changes in their life. And as a result, I've gotten very good at understanding people's perspective. And I think that's probably why I come across with a clarity that you don't often see on X, because X is just a series of algorithmic echo chambers, right? Where people are saying things that they believe to people who agree with them and receiving more feedback the more extremely they state that position. And as someone who does a lot of introspection on myself and also helps people do that as well, it's easy for me to step in and outside of views and be able to bring balance while also having a strong view on, hey, okay, cool. I'm not going to engage in complete relativism because everyone has opinions. Not all of them are correct, but I can at least understand why someone might have an opinion that I consider incorrect. And I'm more interested in bringing people to a positive place than beating someone down and like asserting my position. And I think that's part of what feels clear to people. So, you know, before I was a life coach, I actually worked in the video game industry. I worked at a company called Riot Games, makes a game called League of Legends.
Oh, yeah.
So I have kind of like that, like more tech digital background as well. And then before that, I went to Harvard and I studied philosophy. So I'm a combination of pretty unique experiences that are pretty non-standard and helped me understand a variety of different viewpoints. And the way I got into politics, I mean, we can get into this in full if you want. Basically, before 2024, I didn't really closely follow politics at all. I actually intentionally avoided politics and world news. And in 2020, I had quit my job at Riot. So at that point, I went into just an introspective healing journey where I got to do a lot of digging and understanding myself, because at that point in my life in 2020, I had gotten a lot of the things that I'd wanted. Like I'd gone to Harvard, I'd won an Emmy for some of my work in the esports industry. And I still was really unhappy and had suicidal thoughts. And I was like, what is going on? Like, how is it that all these external things can be happening and still I go to sleep hoping I don't wake up? And as a result, I decided, all right, I'm going to screen out all influences and just like focus on myself. And that's what I did for several years. And then come 2024, I felt more of a desire to just be engaged with the outside world. Especially as I start to understand myself and understood the source of my own suffering, I could more clearly see that in the world and why there was so much confusion and vitriol. And prior to 2024, I had voted Democrat every single year, like just by default. I didn't really think about it. But if you think about my background, I mean, I'm Black. I grew up in New York. I went to Harvard. I worked in tech.
You're ticking every box, bro.
Yeah, it's literally liberal the whole fucking way. So it was just like default, right? Like I didn't even really think about it. And I remember when Trump got elected in 2016, I remember watching the news with my girlfriend. I was horrified. I was like, how's this even happened? And I think that was the first little awakening of, oh, I don't understand half the country. Like I literally don't understand. And I didn't really like dive deep into the rabbit hole of trying to understand. I just realized, oh, okay, I guess what I see in the world is not the world. Then 2020 comes around and I remember there are two things. There was George Floyd and there was COVID. And I remember George Floyd happened. And as a Black person, I was like, I felt like I was in this weird position where people were talking to me as if I was some sort of victim or oppressed or like I should be afraid of cops. And I was like, frankly, I've never had a negative experience with a cop in my life. I don't know why people are saying that they have. And it's not a universal experience because I'm Black and I've never felt like I was treated differently by the authorities. So that was the first thing that revealed to me that, hey, I think the consciousness of the populace is not aligned with my view of reality. The second thing was COVID. And similarly in COVID, it's like, it's almost like we were being told we should be afraid. We were being told that people are dying in droves. And I think there was a period at the beginning of COVID where that was a legitimate concern because we didn't know, right? Like we heard about Italy and them overflowing their hospitals and their morgues overflowing or this virus came out of China. We didn't know what was going on. But by the time that it was time to get the shot, I was like, I'm not actually afraid of this thing. I'm not even convinced that I need this thing because we've been dealing with this for a year and things seem relatively fine besides the coverage of the COVID. So that was the second experience that made me very suspicious of the narratives I was being told about what I'm supposed to be afraid of. And then the third thing was, this was still 2020, and I remember being a New York Times subscriber, and I saw this New York Times headline in my inbox, and it was another negative headline about Trump. And I thought to myself, well, this guy's been president for 4 years. How come I've never seen you guys report anything remotely positive about him? It's always negative. And even though I didn't like him at the time, I knew enough to think if I'm only being told negative things about a person, I'm probably not getting told a full story. So as a result of all those things, I just decided to like go inward and retreat from all that. And as I mentioned, I was on my own healing journey. 2024 happens. I got a lot more clear on who I am, which was, I think, the fundamental thing. Like when I got clear on who I am, I got a lot clearer on how I view the world. And that reflected my communication because I've always been a strong communicator, but I think this year I hit a new level for sure. And there were a few incidents that made me really wake up to the political reality and all the manipulation by the mainstream media. The first thing was the Stormy Daniels conviction when Trump was hit with a felony. And I remember looking at the conviction, I was like, this just doesn't sound like that big of a deal. Like he paid some money to a porn star. It was misclassified as a legal expense. And everyone's like parroting felon, felon, felon. And it's like, I don't think most of them even know what he's been convicted of a felony for. I don't find it morally reprehensible what he did. It's questionable whether he was even legally reprehensible. And it felt like for years, they were just looking for something, right? You remember like, week after week is like Trump's tax records and this thing, that thing. And I was like, after all of that, this is what you found?
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. The second thing was when I saw Biden on the debate stage and he was functionally senile, I was like, how did we get to this point where no one said anything? And then I started just to review a lot of the headlines that have been told about Trump for the last several years. A lot of the hoaxes, like, he, you know, very fine people, calling white supremacists very fine people, just not true. And so much of what I had heard about Trump was just not true or massively misrepresented, or honestly, just a joke from a guy who was like a comedian in chief. Yeah. And when I saw all of that, I really started to revise my thesis and realize, oh shit, I've been brainwashed. I've been brainwashed. I have massive social incentives to not look at the truth because of all the echo chambers I was in. And I see how much other people are being misled as well. And then I think out of just honestly, just like a passion slash anger, I started speaking out spontaneously. And the last straw was on the day that Trump nearly got assassinated, which was July 13th. I remember watching the video and I never felt anything about a politician, right? Like I've been excited when Obama won and, you know, at Harvard, it's a liberal campus, but that was the first time, like I felt it in my chest when I saw him like say, fight, fight, fight. I was like, whoa, that was real. That's in a world of fake shit everywhere. That's a real moment right there. And I was like, wait a second, but I'm not a Trumper. At that time, I was like, RFK, he's in the middle. And then I watched the video again and I felt the same. I was like, wow, this is something real. So then I recorded a video like a few like minutes or an hour later and I just off the cuff. I was like, I just need to say something because they tried to cancel him. Then they tried to convict him and now people are trying to kill him. Like I got to just say something. Said that was the first time I'd ever had a video go viral. So that's that same day. And then things just like really took off from there. Then Trump reposted one of my messages on Truth Social, one of my videos. Then, you know, things were going viral on TikTok and X and Instagram. And then the election happened and I thought it was done. I was like, all right, cool. That was a fun run, but whatever. And then I actually have a mutual friend with Elon Musk. I actually used to work for his video game company, Riot Games.
Okay.
And he had continued to follow me since I left Riot and really started resonating with my stuff, my politics. And he saw one of my posts. I made this post election night. And he was like, this is great. You should like post it on X. And I had not been getting any traction really on X because my audience, I was a public personality in esports, but my audience was very liberal, like gamers. A lot of them don't care about politics. And if they do, they just default blue. So I told him, hey man, I do post it on X. It just doesn't get any traction. I don't think my audience likes it. And he said, well, send me one of your posts and let me see what I can do. Show it to some friends. I sent him a video. It was like a video, like a very positive video, just saying, I think a golden age of America is upon us now. And we have real potential here. One of the friends he apparently sent it to was Elon. So Elon saw it, retweeted it. I looked at my phone, was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And then things really took off from there.
That's awesome. Holy shit. I can resonate with so much of what you just said, because I feel like a lot of what you said, I can connect with personally, even down to sort of your journey of like discovering yourself as well. I didn't go through the darkness that you've gone through, which is super commendable. And I'm glad you got on the other side of that, because I think there's a lot of people that struggle with that. They don't even know they struggle with that, but like a lack of purpose, meaning, a lack of really understanding what drives them. And I think for people that have the opportunity to do that, they're almost like the wealthiest people in the world, because they're actually able to figure out who they are, right? So I think that's going to inspire a lot of people, and I'm glad you're doing what you're doing to really, you know, is your life coaching part of that too? Is like really trying to understand who you are as a person, I'm guessing? Is like that's at the root cause of it?
Exactly. I mean, oftentimes when people come to me, it's not necessarily they're saying, I need to know who I am. There's usually some sort of external problem that they're dealing with that's a result of some sort of internal dysfunction. So it could be like, you know, they've had some success in their career, but they feel burnt out and they want to make a transition, or they're struggling with their relationships or lack of fulfillment. But ultimately, every external problem is just a reflection of an internal problem. And to your point, frankly, I think a lot of the reason there's so much confusion and frankly, just hatred, like you see the Luigi Mangione thing, like people celebrating a dude murdering another person. It's just people are really confused, really lost, really frustrated, and hate themselves.
Yeah.
And I say that with love. Like, I think I used to hate myself, and this, we all have parts of ourselves that it's hard to accept. But the problem is when people project that on the outside world, we get some really crazy outcomes that people start supporting.
Yeah. 100%. I think what's, and I'll throw it here to you, Hans, here in a second. I think what's really, inspiring about your message is that, for one, I connect to it directly, especially like your political journey, because it's very, very, very similar to what I went through as well. I was former Democrat.
Even the timeline is very similar.
Even the timeline, 100%. Like, I think where Hans and I mean, I'll speak for myself, like my awakening, quote unquote, came following Elon Musk's story arc of building Tesla, because, you know, we're super geeky about technology. Sounds like you're, I mean, you've worked for Riot. Holy shit. Like, you're like, you know, you're one of us, you know? By the way, I suck at League. I'm friggin' awful. I started with Dota back in the day with Warcraft 3 when it used to be a custom game. You know, that was like my jam back in the day. But anyway, I won't go down that rabbit hole. But the Tesla story was kind of a proxy for me to understand just how horrible media is in general in conveying what is actually happening. Because especially what during my time at Tesla. So when I used to work at Tesla from 17 to 21, I knew what was happening in the company, and I was following the media coverage of that company and its leader. And I'm like, how are you guys always wrong about what the fuck is happening? Yeah. Like, how is this possible? And then when I started following Andrew Yang's arc in 2019, 2020, with somebody that I connected with from the Democrat side when he was running for president, I was like, holy shit, this guy's a breath of fresh air. Media constantly misrepresenting and misconstruing what he was saying. I'm like, okay, so these guys don't say anything real about anything. They're just there as mouthpieces or as propaganda machines to just convey what their vision of what needs to be absorbed is, whatever that is, right? And that was incredibly frustrating. But what gives me so much hope about your sort of like what you're doing is that I really do feel like we've hit a chasm of sorts. It feels like there's been like a broad awakening by, at least this is, maybe this is my echo chamber here speaking, but I feel like there's been like an awakening by some sort of like threshold of people that are realizing this shit, that are like, what, like for the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years, however long media, especially in the United States, has had a monopoly on the dissemination of information, we've been fucking brainwashed. We have been brainwashed, right? And now with the rise of independent media, with the rise of podcasts, Joe Rogan, I think, is a gigantic piece of this equation with his ability to really popularize podcasts, Elon buying X, more and more people willing to speak up, people like yourself, what Hans and I try to do on this podcast. I feel like there is this new awakening of sorts that is being born and like led by people like you. So I don't know if you have any comments on that, and I'll throw it to Hans, but it's so inspiring to hear you speak, because I'm like, holy fuck, shit's actually getting better.
Yeah. Thank you for acknowledging that. And it's not just your echo chamber. It's happening, right? Because you and I came from outside of this echo chamber. Like, we're all in echo chambers to a degree, but for someone to move from one echo chamber to another is a sign that something's happening. And yeah, I do think there's like a broader shift. And, you know, I even look in my own friend group, right? Because I have friends and some of them don't agree with my political views, but I was just talking to them about a lot of the misinformation, and it's just factual. Like, oh shit, I didn't know that. Like, and when you start just assessing the headlines, it can be as simple as assessing what the media said versus watching the full video yourself. Like, it's not like some deep rabbit hole you need to go down. It can be as simple as, what did they report he said versus watch the YouTube video? And you can see the clear difference. Okay, it doesn't require any leaps of faith. And you might still believe, well, okay, maybe they got that thing wrong, but I still have this fundamental thesis that he's a bad person. Like, okay, but if you were wrong about this particular fact, what else were you wrong about? And I think now that we have X and we have permissionless media, like X and Joe Rogan, people actually have an alternative source of information. But honestly, dude, one of the things I've been realizing is that this propaganda has been going on for at least 50 years.
I mean, not surprised to hear that at all.
Yeah. Like, we've had propaganda that's constantly been getting us into wars nonstop, right? Like, first it was the Vietnam War, and then people started to wake up around that. And then in the 90s, we had all these different wars in the Middle East, and then culminating with the Iraq invasion. They have WMDs. There were no WMDs. And then in Afghanistan, Afghanistan, then Iraq. And now it's Ukraine, and Putin's a great evil. And like, at first I thought, oh, it's just a few things that they're lying about. And they're lying about Trump because they don't like Trump because he's a polarizing figure. Then I realized, no. For them to tell the truth is the exception, not the rule. These people lie about everything.
Crazy.
All the time. Yeah.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, I think, especially like, Farzad said, from our vantage point following Tesla, that's the way that it was. It's like every single piece of coverage, almost like 80, 90, 95% of what was reported. Like you do your homework, you're like, oh, that's crap. That's crap. That's crap.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, yeah, a huge, just a huge wake up call. And then to see all the things that it does touch. And like, if you do the homework on all the wars, like go watch the Scott Horton show, you find it's the same way that, you know, lies are the staple. Truth is the exception when it comes to almost everything about our foreign policy. And it is just extremely frustrating. And then you understand why they have to pull out all the stops against someone like Trump, because he's just saying what's actually true about them and their plans so often.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think if I should, you said something earlier that I want to come back to. It's a kind of a rabbit trail from here. But you said that, you know, a lot of people right now hate themselves. And I think that's a very harsh, but true and extremely important observation at this moment in time. And I'm wondering if you can dig into why that is. Why do so many people feel like they are fundamentally at odds with who they are? And I have an idea and a question, but I just want to put it out there and let you kind of riff on that from a clean slate.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So look, I think it's not a binary, right? Like no one completely hates themselves and no one completely loves themselves, right? Maybe Jesus Christ completely loved himself, but I certainly, there's parts of me that are hateful toward myself. And when I say hate, it's a strong word, but it's like, all these negative thoughts that we can have about ourselves as human beings, that's what hatred is. Thinking that there's something wrong with me, I'm a piece of shit, I'm a fuck up, I'm a bad person. All of these are limiting beliefs that we have, and we live in a culture where these beliefs are promulgated. So as a result, people feel really disempowered, and they don't know it because we're used to it, right? We don't realize how much self-hatred we have toward ourselves because we're constantly in our own experience. So how do we know the alternative? So it's a continuum, right? Like there's a spectrum here, and a lot of people, and I see this in a lot of the class, like some of the class, a lot of far leftist ideology, I think, is rooted in disempowerment and self-hatred and victimhood. And it's like, it just fundamentally a religion of unhappiness. It's like, I'm unhappy with who I am, what I'm getting, and the results in my life. But rather than look inward, I'm going to externalize it outward. So who's the problem? Anyone who's succeeding and I dare say even happy starts to look like an enemy from that worldview. So what that does, like when we talk about wokeism or far leftism, it inverts the social hierarchy. So instead of celebrating people who are successful and winning, we actually say that those people are evil. And how do we know that? Well, billionaires are evil, right? You think billionaire, you think evil. So it's like, anyone who seems to have power by default is like they're bad, or they cheated, or they took advantage of someone to get there. And there are people in power who have done that, but many people are just, no, they just figured some things out. They're in touch with reality and they made good decisions. So the way this works is the people at the bottom of the hierarchy, rather than feeling empowered and feeling like they can actually change their lives and rise to the top, they invert the hierarchy. So now, if someone was like the bottom rung of society, let's say you were like a black transgender handicapped woman, right? The way you look at it is like, oh, I'm the worst off, but I'm also the most victimized. So now we have to create an entire worldview that celebrates the victim and denigrates the winner. And it's innocent. It's honestly innocent. Like everyone's just trying to figure it out and figure out ways to be happy. But the problem with this like wokeism and far leftism is it literally just sows more unhappiness. It doesn't actually produce new things. It's just a constant, endless list of grievances that constantly need to be redressed. So first it's white people's fault. It's men's fault. It's billionaires' fault. It's elite's fault. It's always someone else's fault. And it's just fundamentally an ideology of disempowerment. And it's very, very seductive too, right? Because responsibility is hard, man. Like, no one wants to be told, like, this great quote. Everyone likes meritocracy until they realize they're an idiot. It's kind of true, right? Like, yep. We all like meritocracy until we find out the areas where we don't have merit, myself included, right? Like, it sucks when you get a reality check. You're like, oh shit, I'm actually not very good at this thing. And I actually don't deserve this thing that I don't have yet. That's why I don't have it yet. But you got to look in the mirror for that. And it's hard to look in the mirror. So we'd rather look out the window at other people who are winning and say things like, oh, well, they're taking, it's like the scarcity mindset, like, oh, they took something from me. Is there injustice? Yeah. And frankly, there's always going to be injustice. And the thing that matters is not the presence of injustice so much as our relationship with it. And unfortunately, in an effort to prosecute and fix the injustice, we actually just keep on perpetuating more injustices. And people don't seem to realize it. It's very short-term thinking. So we see this with DEI, for example. Now, the recent immigration debate showed a lot over this H-1B stuff. One of the things I really realized was, holy shit, there's a lot of resentful white people. Like, really resentful white people. I was surprised at how much racism there was toward Indians. And I was like, wow, okay, yeah, white people have felt like they've been discriminated against. And that's been the reverse of the pendulum from black people getting discriminated against. But we fixed that by discriminating more with affirmative action DEI. And I'm someone who's benefited probably from affirmative action because I went to Harvard. I like to think I would have gotten in without affirmative action, but I don't know. I do know affirmative action existed when I went. So I was like, yeah, if you feel like you're being told that you're bad because of the color of your skin and you have privilege and you need to get rid of your privilege and you should have guilt and you have this stain in your DNA for people who, from a time that you didn't even exist, from people that you don't even know. Yeah, there's going to be resentment that builds up and it just keeps swinging back and forth. So we got to stop. Like, it just keeps on going and going. And that's how hatred works.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I wonder is if your like individual's relationship to their value is one of the things that DEI really weaponizes and against everyone, that, you know, your value in the hierarchy depends on things that you cannot control. Like, the only one that is controllable is your sexual orientation, which in my personal opinion is the exact reason that you get the bazillion additional categories is because those are a way for people who don't have any control of their position in the hierarchy to now climb the hierarchy ladder. Because they can say, oh, well, I'm non-binary, or, oh, I'm transgender now, even if they don't really want to be, but like, that's a thing. But anyway, sorry, that's a separate rabbit hole. The thing, like, if your value is whether you're white or you're black in this continuum, okay, if you're black, now you're valuable, but it's not because of anything you did. It's not because of who you are fundamentally. It's not about who you are on the inside or anything that you can control. We just say that you are now at the relative high position. Well, that disconnect between who you know, how you're valued in society and who you actually feel like on the inside isn't comfortable, even when you are quote unquote winning in that specific dimension. And then on the flip side, for someone who's like, for white people in that situation, that, well, you know, I can't control, like, people hate me. It's not, like you said, anything that I did or anything related to who I am. And there's nothing that I can do about that. Like, it doesn't matter if you're winning or losing in that. In both situations, there's nothing that you can do to change your status. And I think that creates resentment and it creates hatred. And it's just insidious and destructive. Basically, any level of the hierarchy, the social hierarchy that you want to apply it.
Yeah. Yeah. And what the thing is, it just transfers resentment back and forth, right? Because as you said, like, yeah, these are immutable characteristics. Like, you can't change the fact that you're white, right? But if we keep on making people's value based on their immutable characteristics, then people are always going to be end up in a situation where they feel resentful and disempowered. So we just keep on transferring the hatred back and forth, and it doesn't work. And that's why Martin Luther King said, judge not by the color of your skin, but the content of your character. The content of your character, you can actually change. That's empowering. You get to control that shit, right? Like, to make the analogy of a video game, like, you get to build your character. You get to level up and make something fucking awesome. That's empowering. But when we get into these like identity politics, like, yeah, you even noted like, okay, well, if the way that you get power is based on your identity, then you'll even change your gender to get power. Because who doesn't want to feel successful and powerful? And I think that's what's happening a lot with these like little kids. I don't think these little kids are genuinely think they're born in the wrong body. I think they think, oh, well, I think, for instance, with little girls, they're being fed constant messages about how they need to get plastic surgery and lip fillers and all these things so they're not beautiful enough. And if they're not beautiful, they're not, no one's going to love them. So no wonder some of these little girls just opt out of the game. It's like, you know what? I kind of like playing with cars. Maybe I'm a boy. See, being a boy seems better. And then on the other side, these little boys are being told masculinity is evil. Men are evil. Men are responsible for all the evil on the planet. Yeah, you know what? I kind of like dolls. I'm a girl. And then parents are being told, if you don't buy into this confusion by your child, you're actually a bigot, right? You're actually a bigot, and your child is going to kill themselves if you continue with your bigotry. And then these poor parents are in situations like, well, I don't want my child to kill themselves, so of course I'm going to buy into it. So it's like a trap. It's just a disempowerment trap that everyone is being bound into. And it's really scary, man, because it gets people to justify literally anything. There's no boundaries yet left whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely my hypothesis on the self-hatred or the rise in self-hatred thing is just that feeling overall of being disempowered and not having any agency in your life. That the less agency that you feel like you have, mm-hmm. the more resentful you become about the fact that you don't have the ability to control any of the outcomes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're defined by the things you were quote unquote born with, and it's outside of your control how successful you can be.
Yes.
Right? It's fucking crazy. And here's the part that if I were to tie this to like the technology of today, the dissemination of that type of thinking and information has gone unabated for how many years? Have we really had a place of free ideas to try to challenge that in a meaningful way? Where that everybody has, let's say, fair access to, or a way for that information to actually propagate to the top and actually make it to the 80% of the population or the 50% of the population versus it being viewed as fringe, right? And I think that's what's been crazy. I feel like this has been like to your point, like, you know, we've been propagandized for 50 years plus, who knows, probably even fucking longer than that. But when it comes to these like wild ideas, up until COVID, and that's what COVID made it really obvious, right? There's been a concerted campaign to quiet things that the thing, the blob, the system deemed not proper to talk about, when in reality, those things are by far the most important things we should be talking about.
Yes.
By far the most important things we should be talking about. The thesis here should be the more controversial the topic, the more popular it should be, because these are the things we have to talk about, right? And then you have to create some sort of like, and the wild thing is that idiot advertisers saw that gold mine and they're like, nah, we don't want to associate with that. Even though that's going to get a trillion views, we don't want to sponsor that kind of content because it's controversial. We don't want to be next to it. I get it. You don't want to be next to like people saying Nazis are good. I get it. But that's not what I'm saying. We should be talking about difficult conversations. Is DEI actually good? Is the transgender stuff that's happening actually good? Is the COVID vaccine actually effective? Are they lying about it? Like, why wouldn't you want to push this kind of content? That this is the exact type of conversation we should be having. And the incentive structure was completely reversed, right? And like if I tie back to like a platform like X or even podcasts, and this is why I get so hopeful, is that I feel like there's been a fundamental shift since the 2024 election. Yeah. I think since Trump got reelected and the masses spoke in a pretty significant manner, I think that has, you know, people talked about the vibe shift. I think like fundamentally speaking, what we're talking about so far, this is the vibe shift. it's this conversation, right? And like this kind of conversation is going to become the norm moving forward. And that's what gets me so freaking excited. It's that exact dynamic.
Let me say one real quick thing about the, you know, the propaganda war. And I think you're right. And you have both experienced this from, you know, kind of inside the machine about the system. It doesn't want you to talk about this topic or that topic. And then they do wage this propaganda war. And that really is largely true. But your, like, how effective that is at influencing you really most of the time has to do with your proximity to the institutional power center. So, you know, are you East Coast, West Coast? Are you by Washington? Are you in New York? Are you going to Ivy League schools? Are you, you know, working at the big tech companies? Like, this is where that propaganda, like, the people who are in power have limited reach. They can't influence anyone anywhere all the time. And so the places that they really focus on are creating those bubbles around the institutions. And I think this is one of the things that, you know, we have observed is that the country, the rest of the country, and I would include myself in this, I've come from a conservative background. I wouldn't call myself conservative. I don't know that I've ever really been a conservative. I've really always been more on the libertarian end of the spectrum because I'm just fiercely individualistic. And I fundamentally think that government is the problem more often than it's the solution. But that's a set of beliefs that I kind of came to from really being outside the system almost all my life. And I think that's something that I do share in common with a lot of conservatives who grew up in rural parts of America where, you know, the strength of the institutional influence just doesn't reach middle America. You know, it doesn't matter what the big corporations say, because no one in your town or within 100 miles of you or 1,000 miles of you works for those companies. You know, they don't live in Washington or they don't have those types of relationships. And so I think that that is one of the things that a lot of people have been outside of this propaganda bubble for a long time. And they've been vocal about saying this is problematic. It's just that their voice didn't really have enough weight yet to carry the day.
Yeah. I mean, there's two things you guys both touched on around the idea of institutions, institutional influence, as well as suppressing conversations because they're just too controversial. You know, my experience being in institutions made it very difficult to actually consider alternative views because there was such a high social cost associated with that. Right. So like I worked at Riot Games. I love my experience there. And it's a California tech company, right? Where there's kind of just a view on what makes you a good person and it's a monoculture. So if I'm an employee there and I have a view that's antithetical to the mainstream view within that company, I risk losing my job. There's a massive social cost for actually thinking for yourself. Similarly, at Harvard, it wasn't as ideologically captured then as it is now. But even then, I mean, I actually ran in pretty liberal circles when I was there. Like that was actually the first community I was in. Like, you know, people were like, do like protests over homelessness and stuff like that, right? And you know, it was well-intentioned, but there was also a level of dogmatism that kind of just made it impervious to alternative opinions. And when you're that young and, you know, a lot of these kids are really smart and they're getting validated for their beliefs their whole life, there's not a lot of intellectual humility, actually. So as a result, like you get people who are very, very convinced they have the right view. And it actually shuts down curiosity about alternative views because there's a high social cost as well. Like you don't want to be excluded from the cool kids table, right? Especially when you're like a freshman in college, you don't want to be excluded from the cool kids table. You're just trying to find your social ground. So yeah, I think these institutions, the institutional capture is concentrated on the coasts, right? So like the Silicon Valley, Western culture at LA, and then there's also New York. And those areas, it's very hard to have your own view. And because the alternative views have been labeled as hateful, like anyone who supports Trump, they must be in some sort of neo-Nazi or hateful or racist or whatever. As a result, you don't even bother investigating the claim. Like, why would you investigate the claim if the repercussion is going to be you lose your social circle, you lose your job, and you get labeled as a racist? And that on the grander scale in this age of the internet, like that stuff can stick with you forever. So I'm very optimistic as well, because when Elon bought X, I still don't think people understand how big of a deal it was. It was huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Like, and I remember actually one of the things that got me comfortable with voting for Trump was Elon actually hosting a space with Trump. And then I realized, I was like, holy shit, I've never actually listened to Trump speak, like long form. Like I had this just latent dislike of this guy, but I never actually heard him express his views outside of a clip that CNN or MSNBC or the New York Times had reported. And I listened to him, I was like, you know, he's definitely himself. He's definitely authentic. I could tell he's not lying. And you might disagree with what he's saying, but wow, there's something about just the practicality of the way he's speaking that's actually really appealing. And it's ironic because prior to Trump, everyone believed that all politicians lied. Everyone believed that these institutions were corrupt, but we had given up on anything being changed. It was just, that's just politics. And ironically, when someone who's actually honest comes around, it's like a massive shock to the immune system. And that's what we saw. It was like an antibody response to Trump. So now that we actually have like more space for free exchange of ideas, hopefully we're starting to see that the way that there's bad ideas out there for sure. The way that you counter bad ideas is with good ideas, not with suppression of ideas. And X, I think, has made it so that now we actually have a real battleground of ideas. And my axiomatic belief is that the truth always wins. It's just a matter of time scale, but the truth always wins. Like, people just resonate with the truth differently than they do with lies. So you don't even need most people saying the truth. You just need enough people saying the truth. So one of the things I really hate this idea of is platforming. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you platformed this person. Like I remember, Andrew Huberman just did a podcast with Jordan Peterson, and I really like Jordan Peterson, especially his older work. And I was reading the Instagram comments and people were saying, oh, I'm very disappointed that you platformed this guy. And first I didn't listen to the conversation, but Huberman responded, he's like, yeah, well, it's a very scientific conversation to be clear. And this guy is a scientist. And secondly, I was sitting there thinking, it was like, if he has bad ideas, then let's expose them and destroy them. Don't suppress them, because when you suppress it, it gets expressed just in a different way. And it gets expressed in a way that where there's not actually a juxtaposition between that shitty idea and a good idea. So people just see that idea, like usually people who are unhappy see that idea as like, you know what? That's the right idea. Yeah, you know what? These kids are being born in the wrong body. And if their parents do oppose them going through the gender transition, they should be confiscated by the state. So it's like, there's a reason why free speech is fundamental. And there has to be a trust that, yeah, you're going to see all the ugliness and the beauty of freedom, right? Like, you're going to see the legitimate white nationalist neo-Nazis on X. Like, yes, you will see them. And you'll see people commenting right under them, pointing out why these people are insane.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
100%. I would love to get your thought on this. So why are people afraid of bad ideas? Why is there a fear or I guess let me reframe it. I don't know if there is a fear for bad ideas or if there's really a fear for bad ideas. And is this something that's inherent to people? Or do you think this is something that we've been coached to think for the last 10, 20 years? Like, has that been part of the programming per se, to have an emotional reaction to a bad idea versus being like, oh, wow, that's pretty dumb. Yeah, no, like, I'm glad this is out there so people can see how fucking dumb this is, right?
Yeah.
I would love to hear how you think about that.
Yeah, I think one is there's a fundamental mistrust of people's ability to discern for themselves and make up their own minds. So if you don't trust in people's ability to discern truth from lies, then of course you're going to suppress ideas that you consider lies rather than let other people arrive at their own conclusions. So I think that's part of it. It's like just a fundamental distrust of humanity's ability to actually see through bullshit. And in fairness, I mean, there have been really bad ideas that have gone really viral to really bad ends. Like, you know, the 20th century shows us plenty of examples of that with rampant Marxism or rampant fascism, right? So at both ends of the spectrum, we can see bad ideas actually become mainstream. But I would counter that those ideas were eventually defeated at great social costs, but they were eventually defeated. And part of the reason why those ideas get to like propagate is because they get momentum from being hidden in the darkness. Whereas if they just got exposed immediately, light is a great disinfectant. It kills viruses. So that's part of it. I don't think people understand the mechanics of like how the battleground of ideas actually works. So they don't want a battleground of ideas. They want one ideas approved by the institutions to be out there. And it's like, that seems good when the ideas are clearly good, but then you have to look at, well, who's making the decisions about what ideas I get to hear? And power corrupts, right? That's why we can't trust an individual to tell us what the truth is. We all have to do that ourselves. And part of the reason, the second part of the reason is, the two things we're told not to talk about are politics and religion, which is silly because politics and religion are two of the most important things to understand as a human. Like, you need to know your views on the world. You need to know what your relationship with God or the universe, whatever you want to call it, is for you. And you can only figure that out if you talk about it. If people don't talk about stuff, they don't actually know what they believe. And I see this all the time. I'm sure you guys see it too. You know, I'm going X and, you know, some of the things that people say is like, wow, this is so insane. I'm pretty sure if you said this out loud using your mouth, you would realize how insane this is. But everyone's locked in their phones. Like, they're not actually interacting with people directly. They're not actually having their views challenged. So they get to really crazy ideas that they've never actually said out loud and never had to actually challenge by a real human in real life. That's one of the dangerous things about this chronically online culture, where we're allowed to say anything online, but we're allowed to say very little offline. Well, as a result, people say crazy stuff online they wouldn't say offline. And if they said it offline, they would get a reality check really fast. But they don't say it offline. So these ideas get propagated. So I think what's happening online is really positive, like Elon buying X and now there being more free speech. But I also think we need that cultural shift where, hey, like, it's okay for people to disagree in person, and we can do that respectfully. And we can do that with the interest, a mutual interest in arriving at the truth together. And that's the only way you get there. Like, you actually have to talk to people who disagree with you.
100%. And I think what's very interesting about the example you use, like, you know, if you look at the 20th century, you can see like different examples of bad ideas gaining power. But the one interesting thing about today is that with technology, we have a way, like you said, we have a way to get ahead of these things actually gaining enough momentum as long as you allow them to surface. Mm-hmm. Like back in the 20th century, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have the ability for individuals to see how people are thinking and what they're talking about and what ideas are trying to get power, right? Like, we didn't have a free speech golden age. It was just like, there was a war of ideas or power, but it was very, very much, tied to the people that were able to leverage a megaphone that very few people had access to, either because they were very powerful or because they gained enough momentum locally, right? There wasn't really a place for ideas to battle. It was like four or five. And then the one that fit the thing for that time the best is the one that gained power. But since it's only really five ideas that are being thrown around, the chances that one of them is going to gain momentum and be wrong is like 20%, right? So it's like, okay, so it's just the law of statistics say, if you don't have a place to catch bad ideas early, you will have bad ideas that gain too much power. So the way to fix that is to leverage technology so you can get the bad ideas early, like you said, and then just crush them with better ideas. And then those people will try to come up with ideas. And then you're like, wow, you're the person who has really bad ideas all the time. Maybe I shouldn't listen to you. Right? Like, yeah. It's like, okay, it's crazy. Yeah. Like it's, I really think we live in a golden age. I think with X, with podcasts, with the internet, curious to see what AI is going to do to this thing. I'm curious to talk to you about this too, if you have the time. Yeah. Like, it feels like we are in the golden age of discourse. It really does feel that way. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but it feels like we are.
Yeah, I feel like we're in the golden age of potential for it, for sure. Like, I think there's still some things that need to happen in order for us to really realize it fully. But yeah, we've never had a time where there's actually a global town square that people pretty much everywhere outside of places like China can all participate in and hash out ideas. And there's very little censorship. So now that we have that, we can actually arrive at the best ideas from around the world, which was never possible before. Like, that's genuinely amazing that we can actually do that. So I think in order for us to like fully realize that golden age potential, everyone needs to be on board with the fact that this is a good thing. Like, free speech is a fundamentally good. And I actually don't think everyone's on board with that fully. Like, I think some people,
I think that's a minority position still.
Yeah, I think it is. Like, I think, you know, us three, we're consuming a similar source of information. We're thinking about this stuff a lot. We're enthusiasts, but I think a lot of people are like, no, hate speech is bad. Misinformation is bad. Right. And that was frankly the Democratic Party position for years. Like, hate speech is bad. And they were talking about, hey, we need to get hate speech under control. And if these social media platforms don't fix it themselves, we're going to fix it for them. Yeah. And in California, where I live, they literally passed a law that made it illegal to make deep fakes, but that's just a form of speech around the election. I think it was like 30 days before the election and 60 days after, something like that. Like, that's scary. It actually got passed. Like, that was a thing. Now, I don't know if anyone who actually got penalized for it, but imagine someone just makes a meme of Kamala Harris talking and saying wild stuff that she wouldn't actually say. And yeah, maybe some people are not going to realize AI, but then they get thrown in prison for that. It's very, very scary. So yeah, I agree with Hans. I think it is a minority view that free speech is fundamentally good. And there's very, very few exceptions to that. Very few exceptions to that. Like outright calls for violence and like not a lot else. But yeah, I think in order for people to realize that, they need to fundamentally trust the long view that, like, in the end, the good truth always wins. The truth is good and it always wins. And I fundamentally believe that. And I don't think you need to just take it on faith. I think you can just look at, if you watch the discourse, it's like, yeah, you'll see stupid ideas just logic fail and fall out of popularity. And the people who hold on to them, it's usually just because of dogmatism. It's not because they actually have a strong view. But it's just like, you know, I think one of the reasons why it's actually kind of funny, if you think about it, like, why did Elon, an engineer, become the biggest influencer in the world? Well, one, it's because of his achievements, but also he's just very in touch with the truth. And he has to be in touch with the truth, because if you're not in touch with the truth, you can't launch rockets into space. Like, if you're wrong, it just doesn't work. It's the same thing with intangibles and qualitative ideas, by the way. Like, obviously, in the world of engineering, we can see how you need objective truth to get results, but also, and even with ideas like philosophies, like, there are such things as bad philosophies. And you know it's bad if it leads to people being unhappy, not reproducing, not being in relationships, poor, sick, and fat. That's what's been happening. We have bad ideas that are leading to people not feeling good and not feeling powerful. So part of the problem is there's so much moral relativism that people think that, why does it even matter? Like, you know, all idea, everyone has an opinion. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. It's your truth. It's my truth. Just respect other people's truth. No, there's the truth. We all have access to it. Some of us are closer to it than others. And we all want to help everyone get to the truth. Like, that's what should be the goal. Not to honor your truth, my truth. That's nonsense. It doesn't make any sense as an idea. So I think as we get to see what happens, unfortunately, when bad ideas reign, and we see the suffering that it creates, I think eventually people are like, okay, I need truth. And, you know, I was just talking to my friend about this yesterday. Right now, I'm really thinking a lot about the Luigi Mangione and the Tesla blowing up in front of the Trump Tower and people trying to assassinate Trump. Like, people are resorting to violence to accomplish their ends. And they say, well, nothing else is working. Well, A, that's simply not true. Right? Like, even the Luigi Mangione assassinating the United Healthcare CEO, it's like, do you realize we just elected the most radical head of health and human services ever in RFK? Like, that's actually a meaningful change. And that didn't come through violence. But if you sow violence, you reap violence. So you think it's going to end with one guy getting shot. Okay, even if you make the change that you want in the short term, in the long term, you've now established that violence is the way that we get things done. And eventually what that leads to is a violent society that no one wants to live in. And, you know, I lived during the George Floyd riots. I lived in LA, which is one of the hotspots for a lot of the riots. And like, literally, you know, the gas station on the corner got robbed near me. Third Street Promenade, which is where I live. It's like in Santa Monica, people just like bashing windows. It's like, I think when reality meets and you actually see what happens when violence becomes the order of the day, then you get real clear on what the truth is. You get real clear on what you want.
Yep. Hans, I see you come with me. Yeah, go.
I think that that's such a good observation that that philosophy, the relationship of truth in philosophy is same as the relationship to truth in something like physics. It's just the unit tests come back a lot faster in physics than they do in philosophy. And, you know, usually the consequences are a lot lower with your physics experiments than your philosophy experiments. So, I mean, we have killed a lot of people with, you know, things like the nuclear bomb, but it was nowhere near as destructive as Marxism. And yeah.
That is such an interesting way of looking at it. It's like, yeah, the failing at engineering, is confined, well, hopefully is confined to just your experiments, unless it makes it out to the public and then, you know, God forbid, planes start crashing and bridges fall apart. But it's still kind of like, it's such a dark thing to think about, but it's true. Like, it's confined to a certain number of people, but if you have truly bad ideas that are out there that will, in the long term, infiltrate, like the mind viruses, right? That they infiltrate the human psyche, and then they propagate, and they create this like super difficult thing to derail, right? Unless you have things like free speech, and unless you have things like dissemination of information, then those ultimately can become way, way, way more damaging over the long term, until the truth finally comes out and it wins, right? So it's such a fascinating parallel there to draw. Do we have you for a little bit longer, Kaizen? I want to be cognizant of the time.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Where do you see AI taking all of this, right? Because I think what's interesting about the time that we live in, and this is something that I'm really thinking through a lot lately too, is we're thinking about, you know, good ideas, bad ideas, the age of information, all these different societal things that have been bred from bad ideas taking hold and propagating with no real ability to fight them, by institutions hogging up the discourse and hogging up the ability to actually get those ideas out there, instilling some sense of like, oh, this is how I should think or how I should approach the problem. Mm-hmm. Artificial intelligence is theoretically could multiply that by a trillion, but living in a world where hopefully now that power is decentralized and it's now up to the individual as well to have a voice and have a message, it seems like we might be in a good place. My dogs agree with me. I don't know if you can hear them. It seems like we might be in a good place. Like we've somehow, and maybe this is why Elon bought X, the momentum we have with free speech is aligning with the threshold that AI has reached, where it can really become a leverage force or a multiplying force on the dissemination of information, right? So do you see this as a positive development? Do you see it as a negative development? Do you see it as a neutral development? I'm really, really curious to hear how you're thinking about this.
Yeah. So I'm fundamentally an optimist. And the reason I'm an optimist is not because of hope, but because I believe in my personal agency and my ability to change the world. And I think that's available to everyone, right? Like, I think pessimism is fundamentally disempowerment. And if you think that you can't change the world, then yeah, it makes sense to be pessimistic. But, you know, one of the exciting things about platforms like X is it allows all three of us to actually change things, like change minds. And if you change minds, you can change everything else. So I think with AI, I mean, there's some scary things about the inputs, because it's trained on data created by humans and it's trained on a lot of bad ideas by humans. I mean, posted, I think it was last week, about if you asked Grok, at least at the time, show me a picture of Americans, it would only show you pictures where it's like majority black Americans, even though black people are 40% of the population. What'd you say?
Hans was left out.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I was like, I mean, I'm glad to see black people represented, but we're 14% of the population. So I queried it multiple times to be clear. And in every one, it was like, it was majority black people. It's like, this is just not representative of reality. And it's not about offensive or anything. It's just like, it's just not the truth. And it'd be one thing if it gave me some pictures where it was majority black and some pictures not. No. It was consistently a particular view. So yeah, I mean, the AI has been, it's trained on propaganda. And there's just no substitute for a human critical thinking, period. There never will be. So we have to pass all this stuff through our own critical filter to really get to the truth and be clear when we're interacting. Just like if you, with a person, you should be skeptical of what they're saying to you. With AI, you should be skeptical of what it's saying to you. But on the good side is, if the inputs are good, the outputs are dramatically better. So I think, as with many technologies, it's just how we use it. And look, I think humanity, you know, people say how bad things are, but if you ask people, like, would you rather be around now or 100 years ago? I think most people would say now. So it's easy to be pessimistic until you actually have to make a choice in what period you'd rather be a human. So there's a lot of things that are going wrong, but I think there's a lot of things that are going right. And I think that AI has potential to, I'm not even potential, it already is giving us such powerful access to parsing through huge sets of data. I mean, I use it every single day. All this stuff that I'm speaking about, all these different social issues and political issues, I use AI for all of my research. And like, I remember when this spending bill came out and Congress tried to rush it through before Christmas. It's like, that was a 1500 page bill. Before AI, no one could know what's in it.
Very true.
How is the average person supposed to see what Congress is doing, much less understand it? But because of AI, we can actually do that. Same thing with, I made a video about the border bill back when this is a big thing. Like Kamala was saying, Trump killed the border bill. And I got curious. I was like, well, what was in the border bill? I just had to come up with a few questions and I realized, oh, the border bill is a funding for Ukraine bill. It's a funding for foreign conflicts bill. With a few border things in there, but it's the minority of the money is for border. So it's like, oh, because of AI, I actually feel more empowered as a person. I don't have to take everything that people say on faith. I can actually verify things for myself. And I still have to be careful because AI is going to reflect my bias and it's not going to reflect the biases of the general population. But still, like, that's a tremendously positive tool. And I think when people start to realize that, like, if you care, the tools are there to change your life and change your understanding of the world and fundamentally even change your government. I think that's a tremendously positive insight that will help people who are awakened to what's going on feel like they can actually do something about it.
I love that. Yeah, I think I'm with you. I'm definitely, I consider myself, I think all three of us, I think I'm speaking for Hanser, but I know him pretty well. I think all of us are optimistic by nature. And it's difficult not to feel optimistic about the future in this like call it post AI world or whatever we're entering, or AI world, I guess. I think the variables that are incredibly important there is like you touched on, it has to be trained on the truth.
Yes.
It has to be trained on the truth. And then that tool has to be democratized. It has to be available to as many people as humanly possible. And in the age of the internet, in the age of Starlink, in the age of X, and you know, I hate the fact, you know, one of my things that I really hate, I hate that every time I talk about things that are interesting, it always points to one fucking person. It's like, why is Elon the one that's working on all these fucking things? You know what I'm saying? Like, and then I'm like, oh, you fucking Elon dick, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, bro, I can't help it. Like, these are the things, like, it's a frontier. Like, how am I supposed, anyway, I don't know why I just got so angry. Anyway.
I get it, but, dude. I speak to that for a second, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, people were going on like, oh, Elon's censoring people and he's banning people who are opposed to his immigration views and Israel's controlling Elon and all this stuff. And I had a moment where I was like, I really want to speak on this, but I don't want to say Elon because I don't want people to think I'm like some Elon sycophant and I'm riding his dick because he promoted my stuff and all this stupid stuff. It's like, well, he's the most influential person in the world. He's doing the most influential things in the world. We have to talk about him.
Exactly.
You have to talk about the people who are doing the important things. So,
yeah. Okay.
If that gives you any comfort.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah. I want to disagree with you for just a second, though. You said it has to be trained on the truth. And I think, like, I agree with where you're going here, but I want to make a distinction for people, because I think that this is going to be really important for people that are actually working on AI and trying to pursue it in a way that is going to be safe for people and all these things. If you try to only give the inputs to the AI that are true, it's never going to know how to actually find the truth in a chaotic environment. And so we have to, I think that Elon is exactly right here on this issue. It needs to be maximally truth seeking, and it needs to be robust in seeking the truth, even in an environment that is extremely noisy and only contains a fraction of the information that is contained in its source data is the actual truth. Now, if we can find it or, you know, create it in such a way that it can sort through 99% BS and extract the 1% truth, that will be the AI that is safe for humanity, that is an incredible tool for all people to use, and, you know, produces this incredible, optimistic, abundant future.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you said that. I mean, so yeah, when I said that, the truth has to be included. That's really what I meant by it. It's like, it can't be just, but I appreciate you walking through that, because it is true. Like if it sees a bunch of bullshit and then it sees a little bit of the truth, it should be able to say, well, this is the, or it should have some sort of guiding principle that says like, hey, don't just assume just because it's popular is the truth. Like, you have to actually be able to discern truth. I don't know how the fuck they're going to figure that out, but they're 1,000 times smarter than I am. So, yeah, that is all to say that as long as we have the proper data sets and the tool is available for everyone to use in some respects, and the individual is not artificially sort of like, and this is like I almost feel like we're going into an age of decentralization as well. This has been happening for a while. I think with like the birth of Bitcoin, that's been an interesting movement that I follow. The podcasting, individual media, you have now AI tools being disseminated. You have platforms like X trying to get to the ground truth in some respects so that they can have good data to feed the system, right? It does feel like there is a general movement away from institutions and systems and more towards the individual, right? And that is ultimately what has me so freaking excited. As long as we have a way for the individual to gain knowledge and have access to a marketplace where they can get themselves to a point where they can actually leverage those things for their development and for, so they can win as a human, right? And forget about winning in the, just win as a human, right? That's the most important thing here. So, and I think that's my takeaway from like if I were to encapsulate Kaizen sort of in like this, how can I summarize a very complex intelligent individual, is like, I feel like you're one of those driving forces. It's like you're helping us get to the fucking next generation of human, you know? So yeah, dude, thank you for everything you do. Honestly, we gotta do this again. If you're up for it, bro, you gotta come back.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. And that was really kind thing to say. And yeah, man, I'm doing my part. And you guys are too, by hosting this podcast and having real conversations. And, you know, I think this is the kind of interaction that makes me very optimistic, because people get it. Yeah. And it's not complicated, right? It's really not complicated. A lot of this stuff is really simple, and the truth is positive. This is the good news. I don't think the truth is ever inherently negative. It's always positive, even if it hurts. And if we create a culture where we celebrate winning rather than complaining about losing, then we can all win more. And there's so many tools available. And the last thing I'll say is, education is so, so, so important, because it precedes all of this stuff. I mean, I count myself lucky in that I majored in philosophy, so I had formal philosophy training. And one of the things you do in philosophy is you actually take a logic class. Like, you actually learn how logic works. Like, people think philosophy is like, oh, it's just a bunch of opinions. No, it's not. Like, there's the reason why we celebrate people like Kant, for example, is because he has a very logically sound framework. Like, you can actually logically check what he's saying. And sure, there's like some axiomatic assumptions there that people have to agree on, but at least you can see if the philosophy is even consistent, right? And a lot of like bad ideas, like Marxism, is not even consistent. It's not even internally consistent. It doesn't make any sense. That's why it leads to Marxist groups end up eating their own, right? It's a dysfunctional ideology. So yeah, we just need, like, when we talk about AI and objective truth, we need to first axiomatically assert that there is such a thing as truth, because I don't even think people agree on that, right? And then we need to equip people to discern through lies and truth themselves, and then add the tools on top to amplify truth-seeking individuals to be able to empower in their own lives. Because look, everyone's just trying to have a good time. It's really that simple, right? So now we have the tools that allow us to have a good time. So let's make sure that we're equipped to use them well. So thanks for having me. This was really fun, and I'd be happy to come back again.
Hell yeah, dude. Where can people find you? X, Instagram, TikTok, all those places. You want to plug them, or do you have I think you have a link tree, right? On your X profile.
Yeah. So if you want the easy way, you can just go to my X profile, which is That's Kaizen. And that has a link to my YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, but it's That's Kaizen everywhere.
Awesome. And we'll put your links in the description and comment section below. Thank you, man. This was awesome. I really appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm going to end recording. And then if you can.